I could see the look on the lady police officer's face, and she was not happy. And I thought, oh boy, now he's in for it. He being the driver of the jacked up four-wheel drive Toyota pickup that I was riding in. I was sitting in the middle seat where there was no seat belt. Now, this was back when the seat belt laws in California had first been enacted. And fortunately for me, even though I was a minor at the time, I'm not sure what the state of the law was then, but these days, if you have a minor in your car who's not seatbelted, you're liable for it if you're the driver. I'm not sure quite what would have happened in this particular case, because he was a teenager as well, although he may have been 18, he may have been older. Though I was a minor, the police officer said, well, just get to your destination. We were catching a ride with this particular friend because of some strange circumstances. This wasn't something we normally did, and there just didn't happen to be a middle seatbelt. But I didn't know that it would turn out that way when I saw the look on the police officer's face. And indeed, I was very nervous. Probably not as nervous, however, as the driver who had brought the horrible look to the police officer's face with a simple phrase. He said, right after she had asked, his name was Naoki. He was Japanese. And he never went by that. We called him Jimmy. But his driver's license, of course, said Naoki. And the police officer had asked to see his driver's license and registration. He handed her the driver's license. She was looking at it, trying to pronounce his name, and said, how do you say this name? You know, Naoki. She was trying to attempt to say Naoki. Meanwhile, he was reaching over into the glove box looking for the registration. So she says, how do you say the name? And he says, what does it look like? Now, you can understand how she interpreted that and why her face changed color a couple of times. Of course, what he meant was, what does the registration look like? He didn't even know. He was so nervous, having been pulled over. He'd never had to get the registration out before. The vehicle wasn't even registered in his name. It was in his father's name. His father had bought the vehicle for him, and he didn't even know what the registration looked like. Fortunately for us, this lady police officer exercised a great deal of restraint and just let it go. I don't think she ever understood what he was really getting at when he said, what does it look like? Misunderstanding. Misunderstanding. In this case, it did not turn out to have a significant impact on how the events turned out. The reason she pulled him over, the registration was not current. And again, his dad had let it lapse without him realizing what had happened. And so I think she gave him a fix-it ticket and me a warning for not having a seatbelt on and sent us on our way. But how easily that little misunderstanding could have turned out very, very differently. Very differently. We made the case last week that in the parable of the prodigal son, this is in Luke 15, and you'll probably want to open your Bibles there again. The parable we know as the parable of the prodigal son, that though there are two very different brothers described in this parable, that they have one thing in common. And that is, both of them have difficulty in their relationship with their father. In fact, I would put it this way, that both of them misunderstood their father's character. Both of them had misunderstandings, serious, significant misunderstandings about their father's character. Last time, we saw how... Shucks, I thought that I had better notes on the review here. Last time we saw that the older brother didn't understand how his father was longing for his brother's return. When his brother showed up at the house, he had to go ask somebody, what's going on? And even if he did understand what was going on, he didn't understand how much his father had been longing and waiting for that brother to come home. He didn't understand why this was occasion for a party. He didn't understand why the father should treat his brother as though he belonged in this house. And he didn't understand how he belonged himself. He thought that, Dad, you've never given me anything, not realizing that he always had the benefits of being a son, that he was near to his father at all times, and that he could have had a party anytime he wanted, because everything the father had was his. But let's look at the younger son a little bit this morning, recognizing that he also had some misunderstandings about his father. And I'd like you to start with me in Luke 15, verses 14 through 19. Luke 15, 14 through 19. I want to make sure that I know where we are in the story. All right, yes. At this point, the younger son has gone away. I'm still getting just a little bit of kind of feedback noise here. Hold on a second. Try that. See if that's a little bit better. The younger son had gone away, squandered his living. Famine come on the country. He was so hungry that he hired himself out. Took a very low position, feeding pigs. The pigs had more to eat still than he did. And it says he came to his senses. I summarized part of verse 14. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country who sent him to his field to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, or some translations say when he came to himself, and isn't that an interesting way to describe his experience? He came to himself. In other words, he had been somewhere else. And when he finally arrived back at reality, look at where I am. Look at this horrible situation I'm in. He said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? I wasn't happy being a son at home, but now I'd be happy to be like one of my father's hired men. How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. All right, so when he comes to his senses, what is the very first thing that he does? When he comes to his senses, what's the very first thing that he does? Don't miss anything. That's before that. Right? He made a decision to go home, although we don't know exactly where. Well, I guess that's probably the very first thing. He made the decision in his head. Right? What evidence do we have of that? The first little inkling that that's what just happened. How do you know that he made a decision to go home?
He decided what he would say to his father.
Yeah, he starts talking to himself. Right? So I think Randy's right. He makes a decision to go home. And then he states his decision. He goes, well, duh, this is a dumb place to be. I could be in a lot better shape if I just went home. Right? He states his decision to go home. And what else?
To work as a hired man.
All right. He actually formulates a plan of how he's going to be better off back at home. As he's talking to himself, though, he states first, what? How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I'll go back and to my father. But then what does he state? What are the next words about? Yeah, he actually decides, practice, he starts practicing his speech, if you will, of what he's going to say to his father when he gets home. I still need to adjust this down a little bit. Alright, so very first thing he does when he comes to his senses is he decides to go home. He starts talking to himself about that decision, kind of formulates a plan, and then he practices his speech, begins to formulate the exact words he's going to use to say to his father when he gets home. Why? Why does he plan a speech? Well, what does that? What insight does that give us into what he thinks he's going to have to do when he goes home? Yeah, he thinks he's going to have to convince his father to let him stay. Right? So he's planning a speech of how he's going to convince his father to let him stay. It's an interesting insight of what he thinks is going to happen when he gets home. What is it that he doesn't understand then about his father? Yeah, he doesn't understand, and specifically, and if we want to narrow down what aspect of his father's love, what doesn't he understand about his father? About his father's love?
It's not what he did that made his father love him.
All right? And we're going to emphasize that a little bit more as we go along. Any other insights? If he thinks he's going to have to convince his father to let him stay, what doesn't he understand about his father's character? Doesn't understand that he loves him, not based on what he's done. Pardon? He doesn't understand the forgiving character of his father. What's his father been doing all the time that he's gone? Pardon? Well, possibly. We don't know for sure. We know he's been missing him and watching for him. And this son doesn't understand that his father has nothing better to do than wait for him to come home. And so he thinks, I better have a good speech prepared, because when I get there, I'm going to have a lot of fast talking to do. Turns out, he's totally wrong about his father. He doesn't understand any better than his older brother that his father wants him to come home, that his father is longing for him to come home, that his father is waiting for him to come home. He thinks that he will not be welcomed. So misunderstanding number one, he doesn't understand that his father wants him. He thinks, I'm not wanted. But the father is longing for him to come home. The father's love is unconditional. It's not based on how well I'm behaving from day to day. Are you aware of that? That God's love for you is not based on how well you are behaving from day to day. I'm not seeking to make light of sin or bad behavior. God is not happy about those. But his love for you is not changed. Even if you have gone to a far place, far from him, and engaged in actions that bring shame upon his name, his love for you remains the same. I don't have to convince God through clever speeches to love me more. And I can't convince him, even through bad behavior, to love me less. His love is a constant for all of us. Is that good news or bad news? That's very good news, even though the younger son did not understand it. By the way, where was he while he was composing this speech? He was in the pigsty. How do we know that? Did you look carefully before you answered that question? How do we know that he's still in the pigsty while he's composing the speech? Hey. Welcome. Anybody look at it closely?
Repeat the question.
I said, how do we know that he's still in the pigsty while he's composing that speech? Right. Right. It told us that he was feeding the pigs. Right. But how do we know he's not on the road home yet? Well, he's still planning to go home. We know he's not at home yet, but how do we know that he hasn't left the pig farm yet? All right. He's still planning that. That's still in his speech. Right, he says, I will set out. So he hasn't set out yet. And it actually says, where is it here? In verse 20. After he's practiced the speech, make me like one of your hired men, it says, so he got up and went to his father. So he's still sitting there in the mud, if you will, in the field, wherever it was, the pigsty, feeding the pigs all the time that he's practicing this speech and preparing, thinking about what he's going to do when he goes home. How much sense does it make to stand around in the pigsty preparing speeches when your father is waiting? Yes, but the key thing here that you've said is he didn't understand that his father was waiting. If he had known, if he had understood that his father was waiting, how much sense does it make to stand around in the pigsty preparing speeches to try to convince your father to take you back? Come on, talk to me. How much sense does that make? Not much at all. Have you ever done that? When you sinned, you come to your senses, you go, this was a bad idea. I really should go back and be right with God. Do you ever spend just a little extra time in the pigsty thinking up a way to convince God that you're really sorry? I know I have. But the good news today is your father is waiting. He's waiting, and it doesn't make any sense to spend any extra time beating up on yourself for what you've done. He wants you back as soon as possible. And it's not kind to him or to yourself to spend any more time in the pigsty than you have to when you come to your senses. Ken, what were you going to say?
Well, you know, when I read this, I think he's out there in the feeding the pigs and eating from the what the pigs are eating.
Oh, he wishes he could, but he doesn't dare.
But I think he had a little time to think about this because he says, "I will arise and go." In other words, to me, I think he went home, laid down on his bed, and thought this over, and says, "Hey, you know, what am I doing?"
Well, he certainly had some time to think about it.
Right.
But all I'm saying is, once you've come to your senses and realize this is a bad idea, why waste any time?
Right.
Go home.
I think what he did, he says, "I will arise and go to my father and tell him, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I'm no longer..." In other words, he squandered his inheritance.
Absolutely.
In other words, he feels like, hey, you know, I don't have anything back there because I've used everything.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And those are perfectly wonderful thoughts. But all I'm saying is, when your father is waiting for you,
right,
you don't have to convince him to take you back. And all the time that he spent trying to think up speeches of how he's going to convince his father to take him back was worse than wasted. Because the father wanted him back.
Right.
He didn't have to think up some way to convince him to let him stay. The father wouldn't have let him go again if he could get away with it in any way. And so all this extra time he spent thinking up, here's what I'm going to tell my dad. Here's how I'm going to... It is time that he could have spent at home, welcome in his father's house.
But you can understand his thinking.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and all I'm saying is that it's all based on a misunderstanding of his father's character.
Absolutely.
That he did not understand that his father was waiting for him at home.
Sometimes by our actions we show that we're not very intelligent. And sometimes circumstances teach us a few things.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We're gonna ponder that a little bit more in a sermon down the line here. All right. So, what did he do next? He's practiced his speech there in the pigsty. What did he do next? Starting with verse 20. Yeah, he actually got up and went to his father, and it says, "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to his father, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.'" This is the speech that he practiced, right? "But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." Now, I don't know. Different translations read differently on this particular question that I'm going to ask. So we'll talk about it a little bit as we go. But how much of his speech that he had practiced, how much of his speech did he get out once he arrived in your translation? Right. Is that his whole speech?
No, it's not what he planned.
What all did he plan to say, and how much did he get out? He planned to say, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son," and? No, of what he planned. And he planned to say, "Make me like one of your hired men." Now, some of the translations in this final section where he actually gives the speech include all three. But the best textual evidence that we have, and the NIV and some of the newer translations that are able to look back at more of the textual evidence, actually leave out that third phrase. So he only got through two-thirds of his speech. "Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." And the father interrupts him, cuts him off, and says, "Quick, bring the best robe, bring a ring, shoes for his feet." Father didn't even let him finish. The father was waiting. He ran out and surrounded him with love before he ever spoke. Did you notice that? Before he even started his speech, he'd come out and hugged him and kissed him. And the son had to start in his speech while fighting off the affection of his father. "Wait, Father. Wait, Dad. I got to tell you something. I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." That even though the son is covered with the filth and stench of the pigsty, when the father sees him, he doesn't run up and throw his arms around him and say, "You stink!" He turns around and says, "Bring my best suit of clothes and come and cover the rags that my son is wearing." And he placed it around his shoulders just as he was. No shower. He didn't even wipe him down with a paper towel like we do to Elena after she's gotten herself all messy. Before we take her out of her chair, we clean off her hands and her face so she doesn't get us all messy. But this dad has come, thrown his arms around his son, in the state that he's in and says, bring my best clothes and put them on him, even in the very state that he's in. The good news is, if you are ungodly and unworthy, dirty, sinful, or weak, the Father loves you just as you are. He says, come, let me put my own robe of righteousness around you. Let me treat you in a way that you don't deserve. Let me treat you and consider you to be righteous and holy, even if you're not. Anyone coming to God as you are, not faking it, right? Not trying to put on a show that, look how good I am, but coming to God as you truly are, God is excited to be able to cover you in Christ's righteousness. And there's even better news than that, if you can handle better news than that. He doesn't want to leave you that way. And if you'll let him cover you just the way you are, then he will also have the privilege of changing you and making you like him. Ken, what were you going to say?
Well, that robe that he put on him, in other words, when you understand the story, in other words, the robe that he put on him was Christ's righteousness. Mm-hmm. And it says, I say unto you, that likewise joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth.
Mm-hmm.
So, his Father was showing the joy.
Yes.
And in accepting him back.
Yes. Yes.
So, when we see what Christ is trying to tell us, even though you're the pigsty, come home.
Come home. Come home and you'll be accepted.
Right.
Be accepted. Now, at what point in the speech does the Father interrupt? What has the Son just said? Remember, he got through two-thirds of it? He says, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And the Father says, okay, I've heard enough of this. And he dives in with, bring the robe, bring the fatted calf. Let's start a party. Did you notice how the Father addressed that issue? I am no longer worthy to be called your son. What words does the Father have to say on that specific topic? Right. Right. There's some symbolic actions here that he commands which speak about sonship. But anything he specifically says about sonship... Keep reading.
For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost in his family.
Yes. So the son says, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. And before the father has finished his short speech, he's saying, this son of mine. Now it's interesting to note, he doesn't contradict the son. In one sense, he doesn't say, oh, yes, you are worthy. But he does say, worthy or not, you are my son. What were you going to say?
He says, everything I have is mine.
Yeah, well, that's his comment to the older brother. But he certainly seems to be saying that through actions here.
Right. Right.
My best robe, the ring on the finger was how you signed the family checkbook. Right, it was a signet ring. In other words, he was giving his son back his place in the family. He doesn't say, you're right, you're not worthy. Nor does he say, you're wrong, you are worthy. He just says, you are my son. By the way, how much understanding is revealed in the son's first statement? Remember his first statement? What does he say? The beginning of his speech. I've sinned against heaven and against.
And in your sight.
And in your sight or and against you, depending how you translate that. How accurate is that? He's absolutely right. He has done some disgraceful things. He's perfectly correct. How about his second statement? I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. How accurate is that? Well, his father, like I said, doesn't contradict him, but he says, you are my son anyway. Let's think about this for just a little bit. Worthiness is a strange concept. I mean, what is worthiness? Do you even know? Could you even define worthiness? Well, I mean, we know the word. We use it. But what does it mean?
Earning respect.
Earning respect? So if someone is worthy, they have earned respect. Is that how you'd put that? Yeah, that's a fairly decent definition. Anybody have other words for that?
Well, it says, in other words, you are dead, but now you're alive, in other words.
Yeah. Well, how does that understand worthiness?
Well, I think it would make you worthwhile, in other words. And then, the way if you are dead in trespasses and sins, And then you turn from that, then you are worthy to be called.
All right. Well,
son of God.
We need to think about that in a little broader terms. I still struggle. I don't have a good definition for worthiness. I mean, what Will has said is about as good as anything. But worthiness isn't always even something we call earned, right? I mean, it isn't always based on what you've done. People are born worthy of respect by their title and their lineage. And, you know, there's all kinds of weird stuff behind worthiness. What makes someone worthy? But let's consider maybe some of what the son was thinking when he says, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. When is a son worthy of his father's name? And what does it take to become unworthy of his father's name? What difference does it make to not be named the son of your father? Can that even happen? Is it possible?
I guess for those that are
legally, we do have some procedures where you could disinherit or disown a child, right? And essentially, this young man is coming back and saying to his father, legally, I have no right to inherit anything from you. How accurate is that?
Right.
I mean, he's absolutely right. He took his inheritance already, and it's gone. And so when he comes back home, he says to his father, Father, I have no right to be named in your estate. Legally, I should be in your eyes as one who's been disinherited. Or we could say, I have no expectation of inheriting anything from you because I've spent my inheritance already. But then he wants to beg and say, but please hire me on. You know, I will work for food. But he's telling his father, I have no expectation to be treated like a son in your house. Because essentially, I have taken my inheritance from you. It's gone. You ought to view me as though I am dead for purposes of inheritance. Does that make sense? You don't owe me anything more. And I should not have a share in your estate. How accurate is that understanding? He's right on. I mean, he's correct. Whatever worthiness really is, It seems like he understands the situation. That's an appropriate understanding of the situation. He doesn't have any right to expect anything from his father. He's taken his money, gone and wasted it. And he ought to be treated like he's dead.
But when he put the robe on him, everything changed.
Very interesting. So even though his understanding is pretty accurate, his father, though he doesn't contradict him, his father does not carry out what he deserves.
Right.
His father begins to treat him as though he is a son who will have an inheritance in his house, just like any other son. And this is fascinating. This is fascinating. The son does not understand that it is the father's glory to show grace to the unworthy. This is who God is. This is what he loves to do. In fact, one of the qualifications for receiving anything good from God, if you're a sinner, is to be unworthy. The people who are worthy can expect to receive nothing from God because they don't need it. But if you are a sinner and you want to receive something from God, you've got to be unworthy. God only gives to unworthy sinners, not to worthy ones. It is the Father's glory to show grace to the unworthy. He does not love us more if we're worthy or less if we aren't. But God does not treat the unworthy as second-class citizens. Go ahead, Willa. Yeah? Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
How many people can you give your robe and your signet
ring? Yeah. Wow.
So, as far as the father was concerned, he was the king.
That's very interesting. That's a very interesting way of putting it. It fits with the other parables that we've just looked at, where when only one was gone, God went out of his way for that one. This is very interesting. Now, what is the father's comment about his son? Would you read that again, Bev? When he names him his son, what is he actually saying in that phrase? All right. I just want you to catch that phrase. This son of mine was dead and is alive again, was lost and is found. How easy is it to give an inheritance to someone who's dead? Thank you, Randy. It's impossible. You can't give something to someone who's dead. And the son comes home and says, Dad, you really ought to treat me as though, for inheritance purposes, though I'm a dead man to you. But the father, he loves to give. It's in his nature to give. He wants to give. He's been waiting to give all this time, and he couldn't give because his son was dead to him. And now, he can give because his son has come back alive. He never knew. He had no guarantee that he would ever see his son again. And so when he comes back, he says, you can't stop me from giving to you. It's like receiving you back from the dead just to see you here again. Just to see you here again. God is generous. And even if we aren't worthy of the gift, he loves to give to anyone he possibly can. I've told this story before, but when Corinne and I were back in Michigan, her beloved cat was killed in a car accident by a car. And she had bad breath. Anybody have a cat with bad breath? We had gone to the pet store and bought a little jar of cat breath mints. I don't think they helped much, right? They were green and full of chlorophyll and, you know, things that are supposed to help bad breath. Like I said, I don't think they improved her breath at all. But she loved them. They were treats. And we used them sparingly because it was a little expensive little, you know, bottle. And I remember shortly before she died, we had gone back and gotten another bottle of these little treats. And we were doling them out, you know, very carefully over an extended period of time. And once she was dead, we were left with 3/4 of a bottle of cat breath mints, treats to her. And we just beat ourselves for having been stingy with them. Because what are we going to do with these now? You know, it's not like we were going to eat them. But we wished that we had given them to her while we had the opportunity because she loved them. And now she was dead and there was nothing we could do. We couldn't give to her anymore. And that's how this father, his son leaves. He loves to give to his children and he cannot give to his son anymore. And so when his son shows up, bedraggled and stinking and everything on his doorstep, all he can think is he's alive. And he loves to give to his children. It's like receiving him back from the dead.
All you need is another cat with bad breath.
Yep. Well, we've managed that. We've managed that. I think we've given up on trying to improve their breath. But we give them lots of treats now. You should see how we go through the bags of treats. We buy them practically in bulk. And yeah, it's ridiculous because they want to charge you $1 for basically a little bag of cat food. You're paying, you know, $2 an ounce or something like that for it. And but we do that because we love to give treats to what are our furry children anyway, while we have the opportunity. So misunderstanding number one was he didn't understand how his father longed for him to come home. He didn't understand that his father was waiting for him. He thought he'd have to convince his father to keep him when he got there. Misunderstanding number two was, I don't belong anymore. You know, I don't have a place. I have wasted my opportunity to be a son of my father, and I don't belong anymore. And his father said, oh, you belong. There is a place for you here. One final misunderstanding. What was the son's proposal to solve the problem of how he could come home even though he was unworthy? Remember what he planned to tell his father? Look, I've sinned against you. I'm unworthy. But please let me stay on these conditions. What was his plan? Yeah. Treat me like a hired man. Treat me like a hired man. What misunderstanding of his father does this highlight? What was he failing to grasp about his father's character that led him to say, I'm not worthy, but please just treat me like a hired man?
He didn't understand his father's love.
Yes, in the broadest sense, all of these are misunderstandings of his father's love. But what specifically about his father's love was he failing to understand when he made this proposal? Treat me like a hired man. He didn't understand, and we've touched on those as we have come along, how much his father valued him just for who he was. You could be a little more specific about that for me. I think you're absolutely correct. What specifically didn't he understand about his father's love that led him to say, treat me like a hired man?
Forgiveness.
Fill that out for me, though. What is it that he's failing to understand about forgiveness that would lead him to say, treat me like a hired man?
He was always looking for him. He was out probably every day looking down the road.
But he could have been out every day looking down the road for a hired man, too. And so that's why I'm just trying to get at, what was he not understanding when he said, ah, yes. He seems to think we'll work for love. We'll work for food. He seems to think that even though he's not worthy, that maybe if he contributes enough, the Father will be pleased with him. The Father will love him, will find a place for him. The work that you do for God will never make him love you more or less. It will never earn you a place in his house. It is always and only a response if it is acceptable to God at all. It is always and only a response to the grace that he has shown. And so just like the older brother who didn't understand how the father longed for his younger brother to come home, and who thought, I've been slaving away from you for you all these years and you've never given me anything. The younger brother also thought that work and love are somehow connected. As in, work for reward. And he was mistaken. The thing I find fascinating is that even though the younger son obviously doesn't get it, right? He doesn't understand salvation. He doesn't understand his father's character. He doesn't understand grace. The father still took him back because all he understood was to be with my father would be better than to follow my own plan in life. And that's good news to me. Because the fact is, if I have to have all my theological ducks in a row, and I have to understand about grace and salvation and all that stuff before I can come to God, that's just one more hurdle. God says, look, when you get sick of running your life your way, come back to me. Even if you don't think I'll take you, come back to me, and I'll teach you what it's like to be my son. I'll show you grace. I'll explain to you that work will never earn my love. But I can't teach you any of those things while you're out there. So come on home. You can learn on the job what it's like to be a son. So many people in church think that if they're not doing enough, they're not productive enough, that their place is in jeopardy. But I don't need to earn special consideration from God. God accepts me back as a family member. And you know, when a family member is sick, you don't say, well, if you don't get up and wash those dishes, I'm going to dock your pay. When a family member is unproductive for whatever reason, we continue to rally around them and feed them and take care of them. We don't fire them. See, he was willing to take his place back as a hired hand, where if he wasn't productive, he'd be let go. You don't keep hired people, you know, on who are unable to work for whatever reason, or who fail to make their significant contribution. But you do keep family members on when they're unable to make, in the eyes of others at least, a significant contribution. See, the father wasn't looking for a hired man all those years, staring off down the road. He wasn't worried about production capacity on the farm. He was looking for a son. We could put it this way. None of our attempts to be nice people or serve God can make it up to him. We can't fix sin and rebellion by working extra hard for God. When planet Earth rebelled, God didn't say, "Oh well, there goes my labor. I've got a labor shortage now. What am I going to do?" And therefore his problem is not solved if we all come back online and say, "We'll work hard for God." When planet Earth rebelled, God said, "I've lost my children." And no number of hired hands laboring hard in the fields can replace one child. Does that make sense to you? Those of you who've been employers or employees, not the same as family. Listen to David's words at the loss of his son Absalom. "Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Would that I had died instead of you. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son." Can't replace a child with a hired man. And those are beautiful sentiments from David, an earthly father. But God did that. He would and did die rather than you. How does that change your picture of God? How important is it to understand the character of our Father? Pretty important. There's always room to grow. Always room to grow and understand Him better. Yeah, gives you a little insight into what it may have been like. Sorry. What it may have been like to not expect to be greeted that way and to yet be given that kind of acceptance.